All right, here we go. Look who's got the second best record in the National League. Gabe Kapler's San Francisco Giants, Farhan Zaidi's San Francisco Giants, heck, Austin Slater's San Francisco Giants, a 5-1 homestand, a 2 out of 3 from the Reds. I guess the only gray cloud right now in their lives is Johnny Cueto's lat tightness, but let's talk about it all with our weekly hit with Sean Estes, of course, the former great Giant pitcher and now current analyst on NBC Sports Bay Area and weekly guest on the Murph and Max Show. So, hey, Sean, happy Thursday. It's always great talking to you because we know the weekend's coming, and we always enjoy the chat, man. How are you?
What's going on?
I'm doing great, man. How are you guys doing? I mean, it's Giants are playing great baseball right now. It's fun to watch. Who knew, right?
Right? I mean, maybe let's start with that, Sean. Who did know? Like, I guess Kurt Casale gave sort of a mission statement after the game saying, we kind of knew in the clubhouse. He said, we're vibing. And then he said, I hope that doesn't make me sound too old, is what he said.
Is that an old thing? I thought that was a young guy thing, that we're vibing. I don't know. I think that plays through generations, right? If you're vibing, then things are going well. Yeah, no, I mean, they got a lot of chemistry right now, you know, a lot of confidence in that clubhouse that they can get it done. I think we talked a little bit about that series against San Diego when they went down there and took 2 out of 3, you know, what that's going to do just from a team aspect, you know, confidence-wise. You know, you went down there and you beat a team that's supposed to contend with the Dodgers for the division and maybe even a World Series caliber type team, and you take 2 out of 3 early in the year after – you know, losing a tough one opening day and then, you know, losing a series against Seattle on the road. And then you come home and you take that momentum from that Padres series and you sweep the Rockies, team you should beat. And then you beat another really good team in Cincinnati, a lot of teams fit to win the Central and a team that came in swinging the bats as well as anybody in the major leagues. And their pitching pretty much shut that offense down for the most part outside of the first game. So, yeah, I think things are good. Things are good in San Francisco right now. I mean, then they get to go on the road and play a really tough Marlins team who's won 4 in a row. It's taken the first 3 against a really good Braves team. So, you know, they're in for another battle against the Marlins. But that's when you want to face teams when they're hot, is when you're doing everything you need to do to win ball games. And like I said, it's been fun to watch. It looks like the offense is starting to show a little bit of some signs of life. But really, the pitching's been the story, and we've talked a lot about it, but that's why it's unfortunate that we saw Johnny have to leave the game yesterday, and hoping that's not something that will take too long to recover from.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're not doctors, and we don't have any information, but it's always alarming when a pitcher just kind of stops in the middle of a performance and just calls his manager out or his trainer out. He did this real quick cut across the throat and called his trainer out. They said lat tightness. Now, again, Sean, we're not holding you to any medical thing, but, like, does that generally mean oblique? I mean, that oblique scares me because that takes weeks, doesn't it? Or I don't know. Is there any amateur analysis you can give about when you actually take yourself out of a game, what that means?
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny. Not funny that he's hurt, but just funny the way it's just the demeanor. You know, I mean, it's just kind of like I just threw 93 right by Castellanos and I'm done. You know, I he gives the throw cut. It's just like they came out, Greschner comes out. And it's just like, yeah, no, I'm good. I did something. And I think that's a veteran move because I think a young guy, you know, he might feel something, make a pitch like that, you know, get caught up in the emotions of that and just like try to pitch through it, maybe make it worse. Or he's just like, you know what? I'm not gonna let this go any longer. I know that I just tweaked something. I know that it's bad enough to where if I try to make another pitch, I can make it worse. And so I'm gonna cut my losses right now, and I'm gonna go in, and I'm gonna get this better so it potentially can make my next start. Now we'll have to see how the MRI goes today. It'll show the significance of the strain wherever it might be. You know, the lat's a pretty big muscle. People don't know what the lat is. It's the muscle that you, when you're doing, like, say, something where you're pulling something down, weight down. It's the muscle that's activated. So it's like, you know, back, but it also can connect up higher into the bottom of into the back of the shoulder. And it also can connect lower down. And then you start getting into the low back and even into the oblique. So where it is, where the strain is, I think will have a lot to do with, you know, the recovery time and obviously how significant the strain is. But we'll probably hear more about that today. But I think the fact that he was able to just remove himself from the game without making it worse, that was a very heady move by him.
Yeah, good stuff.
And he gets a win on top of that. He still gets a W.
Right. What a homestand for him. I mean, what he did on Friday on opening day since we last talked to you was incredible. And then 5 2/3 more shutout today. I mean, or yesterday. He's really pitching great. Now, this is where you look for depth.
Yeah,
this is where you look for depth in your starting rotation. So, I mean, they had just before the game announced that Alex Wood was coming back. And he was going to start Sunday in Miami. And then they were told Logan Webb that he was going to go to the bullpen. And I would have asked you, Sean, if and we're talking to Sean Estes, of course, on the UMA guest line, if Cueto was healthy, I would have asked you how this move affects Logan Webb's head and what you're expecting out of Alex Wood. So I guess I'll ask you now, sort of, how do you think Logan Webb's feeling about being sent to the pen and then sort of brought back now, probably, to the rotation for a young pitcher like that? Kind of corollary two-part question, and then sort of what Alex Wood can mean to the team when he comes up, when he starts Sunday.
Yeah, right. I mean, okay. So, I mean, you're talking to a young guy, and you're explaining to him the situation. Kapler, as we've seen, does a really good job of communicating the stuff with his players, letting them know exactly what's on his mind, letting them know exactly what their role is going to be and why they're doing this. There's no question marks. I feel like that, you know, when I played, it was just, this is what's going to happen, and don't, you know, and just go out there and do your job. Where there leaves a lot of, you know, unknowns, and it can get frustrating at times. But the communication was there. Obviously, Logan Webb took it fine, and it made sense. It made sense because, you know, you have so many lefties in the bullpen already. I believe, you know, especially Alex Wood, who's a veteran guy who's had a history of injuries coming off a back procedure. The last thing you want to do is put him in the bullpen, have him come out of the bullpen. You want him to be able to make a start, prepare for that start, get the treatment that he needs prior to going out there and pitching, and do what he needs to do, you know, as far as warming up and getting his arm and back ready to pitch. So I think that makes sense to put him in a starting role rather than break him in out of the bullpen. You have a guy in Logan Webb who has pitched out of the bullpen. He's been effective out of the bullpen. His stuff plays. I think he's going to be a good starter still, but I think his stuff plays out of the bullpen better. Plus, it gives him another right-handed option. And with that being said, you know, there's no guarantees that when we talk about it, you don't start five guys, you know, your starting rotation, start the season, never ends the season with the same five guys. I mean, it could, but on the way, there are going to be some injuries. There's going to be some guys with ineffective injuries, and you just skip a start, and then you have to have that depth there to be able to fill that void. And Logan Webb provides that. And he, you know, I think that it makes more sense for him to go to the pen than, say, Aaron Sanchez, just because I think Aaron's the same way. A guy that's coming up with injuries, you want him to be able to prepare for his start, get himself, his body ready for that start, rather than have him come out of the bullpen and you know, with runners on base. And I think you're setting yourself up for failure when you do that with a guy like him. So he just seemed like the most logical choice. Now, obviously, like, a lot can happen throughout the season, and we saw it happen yesterday where Johnny had to leave the game. And fortunately for the Giants, they do have that depth with Logan Webb. They can plug him right back in the rotation and feel confident that he can pick up where he left off. And I think that, you know, I don't think he was the weak link in the bullpen the first two rotations. I just think that I think he was throwing a lot better than his numbers. And then you saw yesterday he came in and he was nasty. You know, I think that he'll plug right back into the rotation and give his team a chance to win. So it's a luxury. I mean, it really is. Now, if you start getting too many guys that get banged up in the rotation, then you start having to dig pretty deep in your alternate site. And then you do weaken that rotation a little bit, but they do have arms to go to. So I think the move is right for Logan, and obviously he's going to be back in the rotation now. And then in regard to Alex Wood, I mean, he just gives you a completely different look. He's your first lefty in the rotation. He's a lefty in the rotation. It's funky on top of that. You know, so it gives the rotation a different look, especially if you're facing the same team. You know, if two righties and a lefty, I mean, it really does. If you ask an offense, it just gives, you know, hitters a different look. It's a little bit harder when you're running three righties out, you're running the same lineup out against those three right-handers. That offense can kind of get into a groove. You know, and then you throw a lefty in there, I think it kind of changes the pace a little bit. And you throw a lefty in there that's funky on top of that with good stuff. I liked Alex Wood coming out of spring training, and I thought that he was a good pickup. And I think that he'll be great in the rotation. I think he's just, whenever he's pitching and he's healthy, he has success. So I'm looking forward to seeing his start in Florida.
Yeah, me too. So it'll be DeSclafani on Friday, who's fun to watch, and then Sanchez on Saturday, and then Wood on Sunday. And as you point out, the Marlins are an intriguing little team. I mean, I got this guy Jazz. Did you see this guy Jazz Chisholm from the Marlins? I don't know if you saw this, Sean. They homered off of DeGrom and kind of talked a little bit after. Did you see that?
I didn't. I knew Jazz Chisholm. He was a Diamondback, and he got traded over to the he was a big prospect for the D-backs that traded to the Marlins. He plays with a lot of flair. I know that one. Exciting young player. But I didn't see him talking smack to DeGrom. Not sure that's probably the wisest thing to do. But yeah, you know. They're a young team.
Let me give you the quote and have your reaction to this. He says that DeGrom's 100. He said, people were saying it's an angry 100. It gets on you. This is a Jazz Chisholm. He says, it didn't really get on me like I was expecting. Some people's 100 is a little lighter. To me, it felt like he was on the lighter side.
Oh, jeez. Wow. What is this guy doing?
Okay. Well, I hope that I don't know what happened after that at bat. Did you guys look into that?
After he hit a home run off him.
No, I know, but like in that game, did he face him again?
Oh, good question. I'll have to go look here.
The results were after the home run. But yeah, now they're going to meet again because the Mets and the Marlins will face off quite a few times this year.
Yeah.
So DeGrom's not a guy that's going to probably drill him for saying that, but what he'll do is he'll try to embarrass him.
Sean,
a lot of hitters.
I'm going to interrupt you here. Yeah. I have the answer. Next time he came up, DeGrom struck him out. One fastball, five straight changeups.
See?
There you have it. Okay. So you don't like my fastball? I got three other ways I can punch you out, kid. And for every one home run you hit off of me, I'm going to punch you out seven times. How about that?
That's what you get. Yeah.
So just all DeGrom has to do is show up with the hardware one day and just dump it in his locker. And be like, all right. Obviously, a lot of other players don't think my 100's light, you know. You know what? You're better off just biting your tongue on that and just be happy that you hit a homer. You know,
Funny, man.
Idea.
Okay. Big picture back to the Giants here. Here's the stat. This is crazy, right? Runs scored. 27th in baseball, almost dead last. Team ERA, number 4 in baseball, top 5. How about that? We're back to Bochy ball, right?
That's it. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure we're ready for that 100%. It'd be nice to see. I love good pitching, going out, you know, winning games with timely hitting and hitting some big home runs and having great starting pitching and then really solid bullpen work. I mean, that's fine with me. I like low scoring, fast games. I like watching pitchers duels, but I don't think it's going to be sustainable. I do think that the pitching staff is solid, but I think that offense will get better for sure. I think you'll see a better combination of both. Maybe the pitching not quite as solid, but the offense picking up. And they're still going to find a way to win games that way. But, yeah, no, it is fun to see. We haven't seen that in a while, you know, and that was the formula for championship baseball. So it does make you a little excited, doesn't it? The ERA low and obviously you want to see the offense score a little bit better, but I think they will. I really do. I think the offense will get better. We're starting to see them come around already.
Yeah, I like it. I really do. Like you said, I like low-pitch games. I like well-pitch games. I like, you know, faster games. I like tighter games. I like good defense and pitching. I agree. But it's just kind of funny because last year we painted this team as a slugging team, and now they're back to this. Now, some of it has to do – Sean, those were particularly cold nights. Although they did hit a couple homers through the wind on Tuesday night, which was kind of crazy. But those were – and they had day games actually on 4 of the 6 home games, so – I don't know. Maybe some of the April air is a little thicker, maybe than September when they played a lot of games last year. That could be some of it.
Yeah, well, they're still hitting homers though. That's the thing. It's like it's not they are a slugging team. They're just not hitting for average, you know, and they're not scoring a bunch of runs, but they're hitting a lot of home runs, you know. So, and they've timed them extremely well. But it also, you know, it also makes how well their pitching stand out. You know, when you do look at how many runs they haven't scored. And they got the second best record in the National League, or maybe all of baseball. So obviously, there has to be you know, there's obviously different facets of the game, and the one facet that they've been extremely doing well in is pitching. And so that just shows you when you are pitching well, that can overcome a lot. I think good pitching will beat good hitting, as we saw against the Reds. It makes up for a lot of inadequacies in other facets of your game. Defense, not so much, because I think pitching and defense do go hand in hand. And they have been playing better defense as of late. Are they going to be an A-plus defense? You know, no, they're not. That's just not who they are. But if they make their routine plays, if they're positioned the way they should be positioned, and that's all the analytics part of it, and that comes down to coaching these players, and that's all you ask for, especially as a starting pitcher, as a pitcher, that's all you ask for. Make the routine play. Every once in a while you make something spectacular, but just make the routine play. Let's not shoot ourselves in the foot and give away games defensively. And they haven't done that. So, yeah, pitching and defense have gone hand in hand. And just the offense hasn't shown up yet, but they will. And I'm confident in that.
Yeah, and to your point, by the way, they are fifth in all of baseball in home runs. The Reds are number one at 20, Tigers 19, Astros 19, Braves 18, Giants 17, fifth. So it's kind of odd that they're not scoring runs, and yet they're fifth in home runs, and we've talked about those.
I'll tell you why, because I don't know. At one point, they had 11 home runs, and I think 9 or 10 of them were solo shots.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? So, like, you're hitting homers, but, you know, there's no one on base, so you're not scoring. You're scoring one run instead of two or three or potentially four, which jacks up the runs scored. But they're hitting home runs nonetheless, which is something that we just haven't seen. Other than last year, we haven't seen out of the Giants offense in a while.
Yeah, and then the two-run homers on Tuesday night saved the bacon when they came back from 4-0 down.
Yeah.
So, hey, I got to ask you, absolutely, before we let you, about, you know, we've talked so much about the pitching as a whole, but we haven't honed in on this eighth, ninth inning thing they got going on with Tyler Rogers and Jake McGee. I mean, right now, it's funny. We were listening to Susan Slusser, the Chronicle beat writer, with the afternoon guys yesterday, and she's like, at this point now, the only question is overuse. Like, that's it. We're nitpicking how good it is, but
yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of work for those guys early on. I don't know if that's even worth thinking about on April 15th or just to admire what these guys are doing. What are you seeing out of this eighth, ninth inning combo here?
Yeah, well, it's been fun to watch. I mean, yeah, you'd hope that you wouldn't have to run those two guys out there every day. It's a result of, like we just mentioned, solid starting pitching and not scoring a lot of runs. So you're going to play a lot of close games. But as long as you're leading in an eighth to ninth inning, you feel like you're in pretty good shape right now with the way those two guys are throwing the ball. And if you look at the home run that Rogers gave up to Will Myers in San Diego, that's a pitch he was trying to throw. Myers just did a great job of beating that pitch, or they may have swept that series. But, you know, he's found his groove for sure. And then I'm just a little disappointed that McGee gave up a hit. I really was thinking he would go hitless through the season.
Why not?
And you got a run already. What? How many innings was it? But no, obviously he's going to give up a hit at some point. But he's been so dominant. I don't think anybody expected. Nobody really knew Jake McGee, especially Giant fans, that well. You know, coming into the season, I've seen him pitch quite a bit. He's a Reno kid, so I always follow the local boys, you know, Northern Nevada kids growing up or that have come out of there. So I paid attention to him. And I've always just been amazed that he can throw one pitch and still be effective. I mean, it blows my mind that a hitter can go up to the plate and know what's coming. And it's not 100, right? It's not 100. Now we talk about Chisholm talking about DeGrom's fastball. You know, 100 sometimes doesn't look as hard, but 95 sometimes looks like 100. I think hitters will tell you that McGee's fastball plays a lot harder than 95. And that's his best bolt, 95, 96. So he lives around 93, 94, but guys just can't square it up. It's just and I get the spin rate thing, and I get the second stage life on his fastball. When it gets to the plate, it just has that carry. And you even talked to, you know, Dickerson made a comment the other day that he is really difficult to face. He's a nightmarish at bat, because you think the ball is going to be low, and all of a sudden you take the pitch and it's knee high. It just like explodes through the strike zone. Or you look at a pitch, he throws a belt high fastball that you think you're on time for. All of a sudden you swing and it's over your bat. It's like, There's no, and I face guys like that, like as a pitcher, you know, you face pitchers. Schilling had a fastball like that where you just, you felt like that you could hit it. It looked good out of the hand, but then you swung and it was by you. It gives us, it had that like giddy up to it. There's other pitchers, obviously, they work on that stuff now, but he has it naturally. That's just a natural thing that he has. So, you know, I run him out there as much as you can this year, because he just gets the ball, he throws strikes, and he throws it by guys, and he gets a lot of fly ball. It's about as guarantee as you're going to have right now in the ninth inning. I mean, what a luxury that is to have for Kapler right now in these close games, knowing you can run McGee out there and just feel confident. Not that he's going to get the job done, but he's going to get it done fast, too. There's not a lot of action on the bases. You're not walking guys or giving up hits. So it's a pretty calm ninth inning right now.
That's a great analysis there. He's 34 years old. Just reading about his career, you know, he was with the Rays forever, was a prospect forever, came with, then he had the Tommy John. Then they brought him up, and they had him for years, and then he had knee surgery, he had elbow surgery, and then they traded him to the Rockies, and you never want to go pitch in Denver, and he signed a contract there and had some bad numbers there, and they released him. They released him last July, and then the Dodgers signed him. He took him through that little fake World Series, and then they didn't sign him. So
the fake one. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is. It was fake,
I'm
to be honest.
I'm with you.
And then he signs a 2-year deal with Farhan, who just was so savvy to pluck him up off the sidewalk there. Yeah. And it's by the way, just before I let you go, I love following high school sports and kids from certain areas and the pride of certain areas. So I love that you mentioned Northern Nevada. Now, he's from Sparks. Believe me, I've been out there, too. I've done travel ball summer tournaments out in Sparks. Shout out Sparks, Nevada. Now, you're from Minden, though, right? Now, what you'd be Sparks is like New York City compared to Minden, right?
Well, not quite New York City. I mean, Reno probably was.
Yes.
People say that Reno, Sparks, whatever, the same thing, but they're really not. I'd say it was like, you know, maybe one of the boroughs instead of actually Manhattan.
Yeah.
But
nice.
Maybe, you know, the Bronx or something, but whatever. It was the big city growing up. That's all I knew. I mean, it wasn't San Francisco. It was definitely Reno was the big city. But we played most of our games there in high school, since we had one high school in my town. Carson City had one high school, home of Matt Williams. That's where he went to high school.
Nice.
You know, and then Reno had all the rest. I think South Lake Tahoe had one as well that was in our division, but it was all Reno, you know, and that was, you know, you went in to take the bus into Reno. And
how far were you guys? What's the drive from Minden to Reno?
Well, it's gotten a lot quicker. There's a new highway in now that bypasses Carson, but, you know, back in the day, you had to go through 65 lights through Carson City to get there, and it would take you an hour, 15 minutes, hour and a half sometimes. But now it's like 45 minute drive. It's pretty easy, you know, with the airport being in Reno, it makes it pretty convenient. But we were the Hayseeds, man. We made state. Us and Carson made state. My sophomore year, we went down to Vegas and played Valley High School, who was number 6 in the country at the time. Stud had Doug Mirabelli, Tyler Houston, another kid, Steve Rodriguez. All three of those dudes played in the big leagues.
Wow.
It was a stacked team. And we went down there. I just remember the headlines that we were the Hayseeds that came in from, you know, Minden, Nevada. We didn't win, unfortunately. Valley did win it, but it was a nice run.
Those are great memories.
Competitive teams.
Like a rivalry between like the Reno area and Vegas area, like in the state championships and like prep football and basketball and baseball and all that?
Yeah, I'd say Vegas still reigns supreme. They always have teams that are ranked nationally. Reno every once in a while pump out a really good football team. You know, baseball not quite as competitive in Northern Nevada as it is down in Vegas. Those guys play year round down there. I mean, there's some really good big leaguers that are from Vegas. You know, obviously Bryce Harper and Chris Bryant, to name a couple. But it's a hotbed. You know, Vegas kind of like it is down here in Phoenix. When you can play year-round baseball, and those kids, you know, they get a lot more. They get better, you know. And up in Northern Nevada, you have seasons. You know, it's snow in the winter, and it's a seasonal type. It's a seasonal sport, so you don't, you know, get as many reps. But you know, Nevada Reno is a pretty competitive baseball program. So you know, they get some kids locally as well. It was a great place to grow up for sure.
But I would say that, you know, the rivalry probably is within Vegas more so than, you know, they're not really worried about the Reno. The Reno team's coming down there and whooping up on them.
I love that stuff.
Every once in a while you get it.
Yeah, but yeah. I love you and Maddie and Jake McGee. And I remember, who was that guy? Randy Messenger, I think, came out of Reno, didn't he? I think.
Yeah.
And now
that
you got,
sounds right.
Now you got Kruko calling Reno home.
Yeah, no, Kruk's, he's selling it too, man. It's all about Reno. I mean, he loves it up there. It's a great place. It really is. I mean, you get the Four Seasons. He's right on the base of the Sierras there. You're close to Tahoe. It's beautiful. You know, it's a beautiful view, you know, where he lives. You know, the city itself has picked up quite a bit, you know, maybe the exception of downtown. But, you know, there's some great places to live in Reno. It's a beautiful place to live. And if you, like I said, if you like the Four Seasons, you like to get the snow, fall's great there, spring's great. You know, it's a great place to raise a family.
I appreciate
it growing up, but yeah. I do now.
I love it. I love the detour on this, man, stuff. But anyway, Minden, Nevada, and Jake McGee. Shout out to Sparks High School there. Or Reed High School, I think, right, in Sparks. But anyway.
Reed High, yeah.
Yeah.
Reed
what a
High.
Performance there. All right, hey, man, we can go on and on and on about this Giants team. They're 8-4. They're second in the National League. And now this Marlins. Hey, watch out for Jazz Chisholm. He might be talking mess to Di Sclafani and Wood and Sanchez over the weekend, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are guys you actually look forward to watching play. You just because they're loose cannons, man. You want to just see him do something, maybe say something stupid or whatever.
I agree.
You know what I mean? I think it's fun to watch, though. I do. I don't want everybody being boring and vanilla in baseball. I want to see some flair once in a while.
Yeah, and they just beat the Braves, man. I think they won the series in Atlanta, right? So, you know.
Yeah, they play today. They got it was a four gamer, and they got them today, but they beat them the first three in Atlanta. So that says a lot right there.
Yeah, and I know we're out of time, but you see, despite Ronald Acuna being Willie Mays out there, you know what I mean? Did you see, you know, two more bombs last night, a double, scored, tagged up from third on a pop out to second base. See that?
Yeah. We're talking about exciting guys, you know. He may be at the top of the list. I mean, he is exciting. He plays with flair, like just a passion, flying all over the place, plays hard and hits for power. Does everything. I mean, he's the real deal.
Yeah,
it's a real deal.
We'll look forward to seeing him. But anyway, they're going to go.
Superstars.
We've got to worry about Jazz Chisholm first and Jesus Aguiar and the whole Marlins squad and Don Mattingly. All right, Sean, we love the weekly hits, man. Look forward to it. Be good down there in the desert and enjoy the games.
Okay, you guys too. Good talking to you. We'll talk to you next week.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.